You talk about suffering as grace, but how, when you're in the middle of it, can you see it as grace?
Well, usually you don't. Because you're in it and it seems like real suffering. However, over time, there is something that changes in you. See, you're galumphing along, full of consciousness, and then some drama sucks you in, and you take it as real, and you're suffering. And then later, much later, you are back in your consciousness, and you say, wow, did I get lost in that one? You know, it's like Uspensky in Search of the Miraculous describes how he was walking mindfully down the street. Uspensky is walking down the street. Uspensky is turning left. And then he was doing this mindfulness exercise, and then suddenly he saw the tobacco shop, and he remembered he needed pipe tobacco. Oh, I need pipe tobacco. And 2 days later, he remembered he was doing the experiment. Okay, I mean, he lost it completely. So what you can expect is that the first probably 50,000 times, the drama will creep up on you, because the mind, what it does is a thought comes and it says, psst, I'm real. Think me, see? You know? And you buy in, and you, because it says it in such wily, cute ways, you know, that, you know, this pain in my knee is real. I remember we used to do vow sittings in meditation, and the teacher would say, you must vow that for the next 50 minutes you will not move at all. You won't die, but just don't move. So I vow not to move, and you start, the bell rings, and suddenly you have this excruciating pain in your knee. Well, the one I remember vividly was sitting there in this hot room with 100 people in Bodh Gaya in India. And then a mosquito, hearing a mosquito going through the room. See, the first compassionate thought is, I hope it lands on someone else. See? And then it comes, and it's, and then slowly it lands on the cheek, and you feel it looking for the place to go in, and then it goes in, and you feel its body getting heavier with your blood, and then since you can't do anything, you feel it take its fill, and then it staggers with its load for takeoff, flies away, and then you feel the chemical it left start to swell and itch, and then the itch exists, and then it changes, and then it goes away. And what you learn from that is suffering comes and suffering goes. I mean, at first, the suffering takes you over, the mind stuff takes you over so fast that, and then the adrenaline pumps, and there's all kinds of secondary stuff in it, and then you only wake up later on. As your practices deepen, you wake up sooner and sooner and sooner. You still fall asleep as often, until finally, the thing is shortcut so much, short-circuited, that as you're falling asleep, you're waking up. Because the very falling asleep, the very dying into the thickness of the drama, wakens you. It's like you've moved it to an energy level where you're just feeling like you just dove into water from air. You feel thick. And you know you're trapped. You don't even know what you're trapped about. You just know you're trapped and you start the change. So in answer to the question, at different stages, different ways work in dealing with that kind of stuff of suffering. Yes.
Do you think we will actually realize this idea of one world consciousness and overcome the divisiveness of nation states?
Well, ecology is obviously going to force a lot of you one world consciousness. There are a lot of changes that are going that are move things in that direction. There is a lot of inertia in the system. Nation states aren't going to just lie down and die. You know, they have a lot of people got vested interests in that, PACs and things like that. My sense is, the way I do it is I work full time for it to happen. Whether it happens or not is not my real business. See, that's the interesting thing about the Bhagavad Gita's injunction not to be attached to the fruits of the action. that you do it because it's what you do, because it's what you understand, and you must do it. You live as if it is one world, and you do the best to divest nationalism of its juice as a separating or a divisive entity, and maybe to support it as a functional bioregional grouping or something like that, if it's appropriate, but a different kind of cut of the pie, if you will. And so you work on it, but how it comes out is from a much deeper level of reality than that. And how it comes out is how it comes out. I am neither hopeful nor hopeless. I just do what I do. That's the best I can do for you on that. Yes, there was another question.
How do you deal with someone like Hitler? And do you ever get angry at people now that you know all of these things?
I think that one learns how to discriminate between a being's acts and the being. And I can abhor Hitler's acts and see them as the product of a culture and the product of all kinds of patterns in his karma, and do my best to stop his acts or not allow it to happen or something. At the same moment, not close my heart to that being who is going through that process. There was an interesting moment I had. I was at a Benedictine monastery, and where I was going through the offices of the day with the monks, and after several days, one night, the abbot invited me into his study, and he was a beautiful German scholar, rosy-cheeked, pudgy, beautiful little man, wonderful, and he looked up at me, and he said, "Ram Dass, there's just one question I have to ask you. What was the meaning of the kiss between Judas and Jesus?" And I said, "Perhaps they were enjoying the game." And he went into ecstasy, and we started dancing around the room together. See, because in the world he lived in, he couldn't find anybody that would experience the one behind the two of good and evil, of dark and light. The G. Manly Hall thing, "One who knows not that the prince of darkness is but the other face of the king of light knows not me." And the appreciation of how you act impeccably both in the world of one and two. So in the world of two, you stop Hitler. In the world of one, you are Hitler. Do you hear what I'm trying to deal with here in the question, in the way I'm dealing with it? Now, that when you go back through form and go to the edge of formlessness or God or the nameless or whatever you want to call the thing that has no name, you come to the place where everything breaks down into two, the first polarization, the one becomes two, dark and light, Yab, Yum, positive and negative energy, like there's no forms until there's positive and negative energy. Do you see that, what I mean? Good and evil, all of this stuff. That's a plane of reality where it's already started to come into two. Behind that, there's only one. You and I are real on both of those planes. So was Hitler. Hitler is both in the world of evil and he's also part of God. And that's our responsibility, to live simultaneously on both of those planes. And on the plane of two, you stop Hitler. On the plane of one, you realize Hitler is part of us. The question, do I get angry? Yes, sure. But I let it go just about as fast as I possibly can, because I've got this rascal always, sort of laughing at me, saying, "Oh, got you again," you know? So I don't take my anger very... We have on the table of the Seva Foundation these Groucho Marx glasses. And this is from Wavy also. And if anybody uses the word, the S word, you know what that is, this serious. You got to put on the glasses and you go right on with your conversation, you know. So we don't take ourselves too seriously. And so same with anger. I mean, Maharaji said to me, "Give up a little anger each day and I'll help you." And he has. And I realize that finally, the part of me that gets angry is the part that has a model of how reality ought to be other than the way it is. I mean, if you're a sleazy rat, that's your karmic problem. If I get freaked by it, that's my problem. And I get freaked by it because I have a model, you shouldn't be a sleazy rat. How do I know why you're a sleazy rat? Maybe that's you're on the sleazy rat path. You know, I mean, I don't know. So. Okay, everybody, it's that time. The hall turns back into a pumpkin. In India, when we meet and part, we say namaste, which means I honor the place in you where when you are resting in yours and I am resting in mine, there is only one of us. Namaste. Thank you. Good night.
Concludes The Path of Service with Ram Dass. Music by Glenn Velez. For more information on the work of Ram Dass, please contact the Hahnemann Foundation, 524 San Anselmo Avenue, number 203, San Anselmo, California, 94960, or online at www.ramdasstapes.org. If you would like additional copies of this audio learning program, or to receive a free catalog of wisdom teachings for the inner life, please contact Sounds True, www.soundstrue.com, or call us toll-free 1-800-333-9185, or write the Sounds True catalog, P.O. Box 8010, Boulder, Colorado, 80306. Thank you for listening.